going to hand the meeting over to Jet, who's going to share with us for about 40 minutes.
Hi, I'm Jet, I'm an addict.
Hey, Jet.
Very happy to be here tonight. I'm also really nervous, you know, and I'm outside of these rooms, I'm not a stranger to the stage. Like, I do a lot of performance, you know, and I have that, you know, the feeling of what it's like to go out there. And I also have, like, a real attraction towards that performance thing. But coming and doing a share is totally different. Like, I have a totally different set of nerves to do with sitting down in a room full of addicts and telling my story as I do to, you know, like, being in the green room, walking on the stage, because doing a performance is just that. It's, you know, I'm, like, made up, whatever. You go out there and you give it a bit of flim-flam, and there's showmanship. And in my experience, like, being in these rooms, that has got nothing to do with it, you know? It's, like, for me, when I listen to people share, I get a lot from hearing people share honestly and, you know, like, relating to other people just as people. It's not like... there's no glitter, there's no glitz, it's not glamorous. It is very, very simply that thing, you know, the therapeutic value of one addict helping another. And I love that about this programme, that, you know, every single person in this room has their experience, you know, and we all have something to give to each other. It's not how long someone's been clean. You know, I can talk to somebody who's just come in the rooms or hear someone share who's just come in and, like, hear it and go, okay, I thought I was having a tough day. Get real, Jet. You know, what's it about? Why am I here? And so, yeah, just a bit of a breath there and, you know, just to get real and go, all right, all I have to do is just be me in these rooms. And, you know, like, before I come in here and before I ever used, one thing that I never had, and I probably had never even heard of the concept, was about self-acceptance. It's not something that I ever sort of picked up along the way as I was growing up. Perhaps I was given that message and I didn't hear it, you know, but I didn't have it. What I had was a huge shell of self-consciousness and fear and just terror of life and not knowing how to do it that surrounded me and cut me off from other people, you know, and that was how I was before I ever picked up. You know, I was massively shy. I was just like, you know, I was always kind of on hooks about what I should be doing or what I should be wearing or where I should put my feet, or, you know, I just didn't know how to do it. And I was in that a lot of the time, you know. And I remember the very first time I picked up, when I drank, and I drank to blackout the very first time I drank, and that was my first drug, you know. And I just kind of carried on from there. And I think the thing that I wanted from using was not necessarily to have a good time, or even like this thing that people say about relaxing. I just wanted to get away from me. I just wanted to escape because I didn't know how to do life, you know, and I just wanted to be out of it, like, really, completely out of it. Like, and I was someone who would always try to use to oblivion. That's how it was for me. That's what I wanted. I just wanted not to be here. Yeah, you know, and when I look back, you know, like, I grew up, you know, most of my growing up I was an only child in a family where, you know, it wasn't particularly a happy marriage of my parents. And apart from being shy, I was also a massive rebel, you know, like, that's how I dealt with my stuff. I just thought, sod you, I'm going to do what I want. And I, you know, I kicked back. But I, in my family also, I was like, I was the problem. That was my role, you know, is that everything was about, you know, how I was messing up the family, you know. I was like, remember being told how I was ruining their marriage, you know, and all this sort of thing. But when I look back, you know, I can see that on both sides of my family, there's the disease of addiction runs through it. You know, like my grandfather on one side worked in a brewery all his life. My grandfather on the other side worked in whiskey distilleries. And you know, that wasn't just their job. It wasn't, you know, it's not the 9 to 5. Like, the disease ran through both sides of my family, you know, like, you know, two families of, like, alcoholics, addicts and codependents. And sometimes we're lucky and we get all of them at once. You know, so it took me quite some time to kind of figure that out and just, like, look around at my family a bit and just, like, and let go of some of the denial about how it was all about me and just go, you know, maybe there was a few things going on there, and there still is, you know. And in my family there's some people in recovery, there's some people not in recovery, and there's some people not around anymore, you know. There's some people dead from this disease. Just want to talk about my using a little bit, because when I came into these rooms, I was in like a terrible state, but I also had a lot of trouble accepting that I was an addict. You know, I may have been like completely had it, really ill, my life was a mess, but when I came in, I really, more than anything else, wanted to look for any single scrap of evidence I could find that maybe I didn't need to be here. And so I would, there's that list, you know, the who is an addict, and I would like study that. And then I'd be really annoyed because I had most of those things. But, you know, in my using, I think that, you know, it was, I remember sort of being very depressed and anxious and going to a doctor and really, really wanting somebody to talk to, and that doctor prescribed me Valium. You know, and I just, I was very much, you know, was someone who scored a lot from doctors. And, you know, and my using progressed very, very quickly, and I was your typical kind of gutter junkie. You know, my using wasn't glamorous, you know, would, like, scam doctors, scam other people, have sex with people for drugs. I always had, like, dealer boyfriends, you know, and I thought I was very smart, because I never paid for drugs, you know. And I've heard that saying from other people, you know, sometimes the free things are the most expensive. And I thought I was so smart and I had it made, you know, and I had no concept of like how much I constantly crossed my own boundaries. Or I did feel it and I just thought, oh, well, sod it, you know, I want to score. I will do what it takes to score. You know, have been, you know, I lived in squats, all that kind of thing, just the whole kind of like crime lifestyle of where I, you know, like if people were doing like burglaries or chemists or whatever, I just, you know, I thought that was, that I had it made, that was great, we're going to be, you know, we're going to have lots of drugs and all the rest of it. And my using was about that thing of like waking up in the morning thinking, where am I going to score? Or waking up next to the person who I was using as my habit and being like, well, come on then, you know, where's the drugs? And everything for me was about using. That was my entire focus. You know, just, I think that, you know, when I came in the rooms also, I would listen to people's stories and I'd try and listen for the differences, you know, because I'd be like, oh, I didn't do it as bad as that person. You know, I haven't used as much drugs or the same kind of drugs as that person. You know, and while I've had that story with the very hard out using, you know, and I had no limits about, you know, people say, oh, I never stuck a needle in my arm. I was like, immediately wanted to do that, you know, and because I thought it was like very rock and roll and like cool and all the rest of it, you know. But I also had parts of my using where it slowed down and it was a bit more all right from the death's doorstep lying in a gutter kind of thing. You know, like I had years of my using where I had a partner and they were kind of supporting me and I wasn't using as much. Things were a bit steadier. Unfortunately, the thing was that I was still totally miserable. I still couldn't really share with other people how I was. And, you know, through years and years and years of like functional using, as it's called, you know, meaning that I managed to get up, get dressed and appear to be walking around doing a normal life, was that what was at the forefront of my mind most of the time was all the stuff that I had never ever dealt with, to do with a lot of sexual trauma that I'd gone through in my teenage years. I'd never told anyone this stuff. And I used to go through my life every day in my relationships with other people and just have all this stuff like sitting between me and other people all the time and never ever tell it and feel that I could never talk about it and it would just be with me all the time. And I'd be depressed, I'd be massively angry, I'd take it out on the people around me, but I would never actually say how I was. Because I just thought that people didn't do that. I had no concept of that, you know. After that kind of years of it being a bit all right, like I had the disaster, the explosion, the crazy using, got rescued by my partner, I couldn't stand it. Life was a bit too normal. It was all right-ish, you know. And I just had this thing where they like wanted to settle down. Things were kind of looking quite nice. I thought, no, not me. I'm not doing this. And I just set fire to it all. You know, like that's how I did things. You know, I just would went out, obliterated the relationship, went straight back into the stuff of like living in a house where we had like an opium plantation outside. You know, and I moved in with someone who was a drug dealer and who had massive amounts of drugs and went straight back to the kind of hard out, on the go, really, you know, as much drugs as possible in a short amount of time, oblivion stuff again. You know, and I guess what happened in the end with my using was, I mean, I wanted to stop for a lot of years. Using, I was never like, it was never like a party for me. I was never in that kind of like, oh, using was great. I feel so relaxed. You know, I was always a bit of a disaster, really. You know, I was one of those people that you would probably try and get out of your house before I either nicked everything or smashed everything. So, you know, I wasn't like a happy, bubbly kind of like addict. But, you know, when I went back into like the real freestyle kind of really plunging off the edge using, what happened was that despite wanting to use and never being able to make it past that 2.5 days of like hanging out, you know, making pacts with my friends, all that sort of thing of like, yeah, okay, we're going to stop using, hang out for 2.5 days, I'd use again, I'd always use again. Of course I would, you know, I was surrounded by drugs, I was surrounded by people who used. You know, I'm sure that, you know, loads of people in this room have that experience of like, as soon as you stop using or you say that you're going to stop using drugs, you never see so many like drugs in your life, you know. People will constantly be trying to like give you drugs, you know. Yeah, so, you know, but what happened for me was that my health completely broke down. You know, I really had that thing where I hit a rock bottom. I didn't want to use, I couldn't stop using, but I got to the point where I could not do it anymore. I really got to that place where I thought, I'm going to die. Like, this is going to kill me, and I can feel it happening. I can see it straight ahead. And all those times, you know, I've had times where I've woken up and I've been resuscitated, and I thought, I don't care. I'm straight back out and used again. This time I was like, hang on, I think it's really, really going to happen. And I'm not ready. I don't want to die yet, you know? And I think, you know, like for me, to develop a fear of death was really something else, because I never had it before, you know. It was just like, well, bring it on, why not? And this time I just thought, no, I want something else. And I could see that, you know, I could see the thing of like the absolute dead end, literally. And then in terms of like what else my life could be like, nothing, no vision whatsoever, no idea, you know. I just couldn't imagine anything else. And I just, you know, no vision of the future, nothing. And that's when I came into these rooms. I had a boyfriend at the time who was on a methadone script and had been in the rooms, gave me the blue book, you know. And I read it, and at least I read some of the stories, you know. And I realised that I was an addict, you know. And for me, the thing that happened when I realised that I was an addict was I felt an enormous sense of shame. You know, like I felt really, really ashamed that I had this addiction and that I couldn't do anything about it. And I just felt awful about myself. You know, I just felt like, God, what am I going to do, you know? And I came to meetings, like I knew like a couple of people who had been using, and I asked them what they did, and they said, I go to meetings, you know, they came to this program. And I remember my very first meeting, like I was so, you know, I was very, very particular about where I would and wouldn't go. My world was extremely small. And I didn't want to go to a mixed meeting. I would only go to a women's meeting, you know, because I was like, had like a very big fear of men as an addict, you know, to do with the way that I used. And my first women's meeting that I went to, there was a man there. And I think it's quite funny, you know, because all the other women in the meeting were a bit hysterical about protecting the newcomer from this guy, you know. But I mean, that's not in the traditions either. It's like the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop using. So, you know, if someone's like needs a bloody meeting, they can go to the meeting, you know. And I wasn't really that bothered. I mean, they were very bothered, but, you know, it's okay. But I sat in my first meeting, and the thing that I remember was that I just sat there and I was like quite petrified. I hadn't got the thing that you could come to the meetings while you were still using, so somehow I'd like white knuckled it through like withdrawing and like getting clean, because I thought I had to like do that first and then I could come to the meetings. You know, it's just a tiny little bit of perfectionism has shown up in my character defects. So I came to the meetings, you know, and I like kind of got through like hanging out all the rest of it. And what I remember about that first meeting was that people talked about things that I was thinking about. Like I sat there and heard people say things and realised that I wasn't the only person who felt the way that I felt. And it was an enormous revelation to me, because, you know, I got clean when I was like 29 and a half, I think, you know, and I had gone through all my life never ever realising that other people had this stuff going on in their heads. You know, I just thought it was just me, you know, and that there was, obviously there was something wrong with me, but I never understood that other people had those feelings, that other people felt insecure, that other people felt self-conscious, that other people didn't know how to do things, that other people had problems with doing life, or that they had experiences that had hurt them and that they needed to share with other human beings, you know. And it was just an amazing, amazing feeling to just sit there and listen and hear people speak the stuff that I was also feeling and identify. You know, and I shared in that meeting as well. You know, and I kept coming back to meetings. I think what I got in that first meeting also was that I was welcomed. You know, and I think that that's really, to me, has always been hugely important, is, you know, like just to like smile at people when they come in the room or say hello, because for me that was very important. You know, I was like jittering the whole time, and just, and I can still be very self-conscious and still have problems with just the very, very basic face-to-face, you know, hello with people, and just that very, very simple thing of, you know, attraction rather than promotion. To me, it's like saying hello when someone comes in and saying welcome. But, you know, it's as simple as that. When I come in, I think there's things that I did that helped me to stay clean. And, you know, very simple things, like I went to meetings. And I got clean in a very small fellowship where there wasn't an NA meeting every night of the week. You know, maybe there was, I think there might have been like 3 meetings a week. And it was tiny. A big meeting was like 10 people. You know that thing where they say, like, you know, like a meeting is when 2 addicts are together and there's like an air of recovery in the room. I've done it. I've sat in a room where only one other person's been there. We've read from the book together. I stayed clean, you know, like, and I, you know, I wanted it, and I kept going to meetings. I told other people how I was. I asked for help, which I think is massively important, you know, like for someone like me who always kept their stuff to themselves no matter how painful it was. I needed to keep telling people how I was. I needed to keep asking people for help and to keep breaking, like very, very consciously, through that isolation, which can still descend on me today. You know, this is a disease of isolation, and it can get me any time. because for me it's very, very natural. I love sitting at home in my room. I don't care if I feel miserable. I want to be alone in my room, away from other people. You know, that's what I want to do. It's perfectly natural for me. You know, I'll just be on Facebook and I will turn my chat off so no one can talk to me either. You know, and I'll just be there being a bit lonely or whatever. You know, it's like, oh, God. You know, I made phone calls. I took phone numbers. I made phone calls. I let other people ring me up and I talked to people on the phone, listened to how other people were and told them how I was. I hung out with people after meetings. You know, I mean, I think sometimes as a newcomer, I just, like, told so many stories about drugs and how many drugs I'd used and heard so many other stories about drugs that it's a wonder we didn't go completely insane. But, you know, that was my newcomer experience. That was all I knew about as well, you know, and so that's what I talked about. And still, I kept going to the meetings, you know, and sometimes I went to other fellowships, you know, because there wasn't a meeting every day. And so I had to get that thing that, you know, alcohol is a drug. Because for me, I was like, oh, no, I only use these drugs, you know, and, like, I was never really into alcohol. But I was a binge drinker, you know, and if I was angry or whatever, I would wake up my housemate and go, let's go down to the early opener and get 2 litre flagon of whiskey. Like, alcohol, you know, I guess. It was my back door. It's always there, you know, so I had to get that. I had to get that thing that I can't use anything. Total abstinence program. I had a sponsor, you know, immediately, as soon as I could. I found someone in the rooms. I just got a sponsor, someone who I could talk to one-on-one and who knew where I was, what I was doing, and that I knew where they were and that I could reach out to them, you know, and get a bit of guidance, someone with more time up than me who I could go, how does it work? What do I do? You know, and just follow what they said. Did lots of things like, you know, writing a journal, all the rest of it. I used to make, like, lists of what to do in the day because I just really knew nothing about the simple things of life. So I would get up in the morning and I would write, well, I'd have get up on the list. But really, you know, I mean, how much time in my youth did I spend, like, months sitting in my bed, you know, and I would never bloody get up unless I wanted to go to the toilet. I just go, come back to my bed and keep using. I would, like, camp, you know, so get up, you know, have a shower, have breakfast, like, eat, you know, go to your meeting, you know, like, read some recovery stuff, but, like, really, really simple list of the things to do because I didn't know what to do. And I still, today, after quite a few years, you know, in recovery and staying clean, I can still forget the basics, you know, I'm like, God, how do I eat? What's proper eating? You know, like, I can just wander. I have to stay on it all the time. So, yeah, I think today often, you know, I can still go back into that early days stuff. It doesn't take much to, like, push me off my course. Or sometimes, you know, like, life events happen and I can feel like I'm back in that newcomer space. You know, if a relationship ends, or I've had people very, very close to me die when I've been in recovery. Or sometimes it's just like a really simple thing where I'm ill or I feel a bit down or I'm worried about, you know, what's happening with my job or something, and I can be back in that early space where I don't know how to do the simple things. But what I have today, you know, like, I can still go completely stark, staring mad. I have the toolkit that I've constructed through my time in recovery, you know. I've had that experience of learning and listening to other people and just, like, picking up what other people do as their suggestions and practicing it over and over and over again on a daily basis of how to stay clean, you know. And, like, just for me today, you know, if something goes wrong, I don't pick up, I go to a meeting. You know, if something goes wrong, I don't have my default of, like, what can I use, you know, what can I do? You know, how can I get drugs? I'm like, who do I know in recovery or who do I have in my support network of people that I trust and I can talk to? Who can I talk to? You know? I think I just want to talk a bit more about, you know, like, that experience of, like, being in the rooms and, you know, like, that thing of coming into the fellowship, and I got clean in a very small fellowship, and I think that what I had around about 5 years clean was that I was like in a meeting that had been my home group for 5 years, and like a lot of people that I'd seen get clean, you know, at around about the same time, and who had been around all my recovery. And I just remember like standing at the end of the meeting saying the serenity prayer, and you know, like people say that thing of, you know, like we'll love you until you can love yourself, and I'm like, you know, yeah, whatever, you know. But I remember standing in that circle, you know, and holding hands with this group of people who had been there through my recovery, and thinking, these people love me, you know, like these people really love me, and not in the way of like, oh, I love you, hearts and flowers, whatever, but in the way that they knew my stuff. They had stuck with me through thick and thin. They knew all lots of bad things about me. You know, they knew good things about me. They just knew me, how I am on any given day of the week. And I knew stuff about them. You know, I had sat in that room day in, day out, year in, year out, and listened to like people have fabulous times in their life, listened to like the most awful, awful, sad experiences that people have had. You know, their grief and their pain and their children dying and just, you know, like some really, really tough things, and just not had to do anything about it, but sit in the room and listen. You know, it's so simple. It's so really, really simple. You know, it's that what I love is the silence in these rooms, you know, of just where I can say how I am and I can listen to how other people are. And I don't have to say anything about it, and I don't have to expect that anyone's going to say anything back to me about how I am. But to me, it's that very simple thing of like bearing witness for each other. You know, like the safety of just knowing that what I say, it's just going to be heard, you know, and that's it. It's as simple as that. But, you know, having that experience, saying that serenity prayer with that group of people and thinking, these people are around. They've been around for the long haul. And like I've been clean for over 18 years, and I still have those friends from my early recovery, you know, and it's like they're in New Zealand, but I stay in touch with people from my recovery. And like my sponsor now is someone who knew me before I got clean. And she hasn't been my sponsor my whole recovery, but say she's been my sponsor for probably the last 5 years. But, you know, that's someone that I've known for probably, like, close to 25 years. You know, and it's like, and I have, you know, like, another sponsor who, you know, was my sponsor when I was, like, you know, like, say between sort of, like, 2 years in to 5 years in, and I still know her. You know, and I know her, sort of, her teenage daughter, and I know, you know, like I have other friends who are in that kind of like teen years of recovery, and I've known them all my recovery. And it's so lovely to just think of, you know, remember how we were when we came in and that whole thing, and how, you know, they're still around. It's just an amazing, amazing thing, you know, just that the people that you get clean with, you know, there is that incredible thing that there is the possibility that people will stick around in your life. You know, I mean, there's also, you know, the people that don't make it, and also that thing where I can't choose who gets clean. You know, it's like, that's just how it is. I cannot make a choice about who's going to get it and who isn't, and who I like the most and who I'd like to get it. It's like, it's who kind of sticks here and who does the work and who somehow, you know, by higher power, miraculous, whatever, manages to stay clean. And to say about sponsorship, you know, like for me, that has been a very important thing, is to have a sponsor. I've had times in my recovery when I have had a sponsor and times when I haven't. I've had times when I've been close to the program and working it and going to a lot of meetings and like doing it, and times when I haven't. And I know the difference. I know the difference in how I feel. You know, it's like, when I was 5 years clean, I moved from the city where I lived and I went to Sydney, you know, and I was, and I, one of the things that I thought was, oh, great, I can get away from those bloody meetings, you know, and just, it was like, no matter how good recovery is for me and how much I get from it, sometimes I have that thing where I just want to run away, You know, and I have that thing where I can get resentful in my recovery. And I think, oh, I'm all right now. You know, I'm 5 years clean or whatever. I can just kind of go it alone a bit and all the rest of it. And it's also hard, the thing of, like, moving to a new place. Those people weren't who I got clean with. And so it took a bit of effort to, like, make new friends, stay in the meetings, you know, like, put the time in and actually allow people to get close to me because I wasn't in the same desperate space. In some ways, maybe I was lucky because I'd had, at 5 years clean when I moved as well, I had had a very close family member die, like someone who I grew up with close as a sibling, you know, and they died through alcoholism. And I was desperate enough to, like, stick a bit close to that Sydney Fellowship and still go to meetings because that's also my default, is when I'm suffering, I get myself into a meeting and I tell people how I am. You know, sometimes I hear people say in meetings, oh, you know, I don't really share my stuff in meetings. I save it for when I'm with my sponsor or whatever. But it's like, well, that might be their thing. But for me, if I really am feeling absolutely rubbish, I say it in a meeting and I share it. And I share it because that is how I stay clean, is that I tell people how I am. Because I need to let it go. I don't want my stuff to become bottled up inside me again. It's too easy for that to happen, you know. And I might not pick up. I might have the experience of, you know, like staying clean at a day at a time where it's almost become like a habit. But there's nothing stopping me from going insane in my recovery. You know, I might not be using, but oh my God. You know, my experience is that my disease has moved around in a variety of different ways in my recovery. You know, it's like, maybe like 2 or 3 years clean, I noticed how mad I could go on relationships. And then I stopped, like, doing relationships for a while, and I noticed how mad I could go on food. You know, I've been, like, quite a few years clean in recovery, and I've, like, had really, really problems with, like, eating disorders and all kinds of things like that. You know, I've gone crazy with, you know, it's like I will find a way to step away from my feelings. I'm an addict. I will have a go. You know, it's like I will not realise I'm doing it. You know, just be there, sitting in my room with, like, 2 litres of ice cream, at the same time, like, starving the rest of the time, be weighing, like, 47 kilos, binging on food, whatever, I'll be like, oh, but I'm clean. I've been to a meeting, you know? It's like I've had to work through every single piece of where, thank you, where my disease goes. You know, like, God, I think 15 or 16 years clean, maybe a little bit further back, I had a relationship where my codependency was so severe, I had another rock bottom. I was so ill in my recovery through the places that I went with my codependency and relationships. What I had to do was I had to get back into the rooms, recommit, I got a new sponsor, I worked the steps. You know, and I worked the steps about where my addiction had me at that point in time, what was going on for me right now, what my problems were, what was making me go crazy today. You know, it's like I could talk about, you know, the drugs I used like many years ago, and I needed to do that stuff as well. But I worked the steps today about how I am today, about what's my problems in my life today. You know, and the steps are an excellent, excellent tool for that. And I had like contact with a sponsee today, and she was saying to me, how can I look at this particular step that I'm working? I need to work, you know, not just on the drugs, but on my disease. It's like, you know, just to share that experience. It's like this program for me is about how do I live today with the problems that I have today. You know, it's like, yes, I need to stay clean. Yes, I need to not pick up today. But I also need on a daily basis to keep working on learning about life. You know, it never ever stops for me. You know, there's also been times in my recovery where I've gone, God, I've done everything, I'm bored. My recovery's not going anywhere. And then I have that experience where I get clean, I have things good for a while, and I reach a glass ceiling. I think I've had as much as I can have of recovery. I think it's got as good as it can get in recovery. I'm a bit like, And then I put some more work in, and that's also been my experience, as I've always wanted more. But I put some more work in, I go through a bit more pain of self-discovery. You know, I'm working a step four at the moment, sticking very, very close with my sponsor because it's painful, you know, because I want to keep growing in my recovery, and it has been possible for me to do that. You know, I haven't become like some kind of super evolved spiritual being in my recovery. I just haven't, you know. That's me. I still go mad. I'm still an addict. But I just find that the closer I can stick to the program, the more I can be in meetings, the more I can like look around the room and see faces that I know and people that I say hello to and people that I think, oh yeah, I know some of your stuff, you know some of my stuff. I know that you're working the program and that's, you know, that's where I want to be. It's, you know, I'll be all right. You know, I might go a bit mad, but I come back here and I can get a bit sane again, you know, and I can just have that ease of recovery. You know, my sponsor today, I had an email from her and I told her I was going to like two meetings today and she just laughed and she went, Jet, you must be getting really well if you're going to two meetings in a day. You know, and it's not for me. I don't have to like stay away from it to prove how well I am. It's like, you know, I'm just glad to be here and I feel just a bit relaxed to just be in here and go, it's okay, you know, I don't have to fight with it. When I actually do it, when I put the work in, that's when I get a bit of peace. Yeah, and I might just leave it there. Thank you. Thank you.